Music creates order out of chaos. For rhythm imposes unanimity upon the divergent, melody imposes continuity upon the disjointed, and harmony imposes compatibility upon the incongruous. Einstein would write that his search for a unified field theory would ultimately allow him to read the mind of God. If string theory is correct, we now see that the mind of God represents cosmic music resonating through 10-dimensional hyperspace. As Gottfried Leibniz once said, "Music is the hidden arithmetic exercise of a soul unconscious that it is calculating." Historically, the link between music and science was forged as early as the 5th century BC, when the Greek Pythagoreans discovered the laws of harmony and reduced them to mathematics. They found that the tone of a plucked lyre string corresponded to its length. If one doubled the length of a lyre string, then the note went down by a full octave. If the length of a string was reduced by two-thirds, then the tone changed by a fifth. Hence, the laws of music and harmony could be reduced to precise relations between numbers. Not surprisingly, the Pythagoreans' motto was, "All things are numbers." Originally, they were so pleased with this result that they dared to apply these laws of harmony to the entire universe. Their effort failed because of the enormous complexity of matter. However, in some sense, with string theory, physicists are going back to the Pythagorean dream. Commenting on this historic link, Jamie James once said, "Music and science were once identified so profoundly that anyone who suggested that there was any essential difference between them would have been considered an ignoramus. But now, someone proposing that they have anything in common runs the risk of being labeled a philistine by one group and a dilettante by the other, and, most damning of all, a popularizer by both." Problems in hyperspace. But if higher dimensions actually exist in nature, and not only in pure mathematics, then string theorists have to face the same problem that dogged Theodor Kaluza and Felix Klein back in 1921 when they formulated the first higher dimensional theory. Where are these higher dimensions? Kaluza, a previously obscure mathematician, wrote a letter to Einstein proposing to formulate Einstein's equations in five dimensions, one dimension of time and four dimensions of space. Mathematically, this was no problem, since Einstein's equations can be trivially written in any dimension. But the letter contained a startling observation. If one manually separated out the fourth-dimensional pieces contained within the five-dimensional equations, you would automatically find, almost by magic, Maxwell's theory of light. In other words, Maxwell's theory of the electromagnetic force tumbles right out of Einstein's equations for gravity if we simply add a fifth dimension. Although we cannot see the fifth dimension, ripples can form on the fifth dimension, which correspond to light waves. This is a gratifying result, since generations of physicists and engineers have had to memorize Maxwell's difficult equations for the past 150 years. Now, these complex equations emerge effortlessly as the simplest vibrations one can find in the fifth dimension. Imagine fish swimming in a shallow pond just below the lily pads, thinking that their universe is only two-dimensional. Our three-dimensional world may be beyond their ken, but there is a way in which they can detect the presence of the third dimension. If it rains, they can clearly see the shadows of ripples traveling along the surface of the pond. Similarly, we cannot see the fifth dimension, but ripples in the fifth dimension appear to us as light. Kaluza's theory was a beautiful and profound revelation concerning the power of symmetry. It was later shown that if we add even more dimensions to Einstein's old theory and make them vibrate, then these higher dimensional vibrations reproduce the W and Z bosons and gluons found in the weak and strong nuclear forces. If the program advocated by Kaluza was correct, then the universe was apparently much simpler than previously thought. Simply vibrating higher and higher dimensions reproduced many of the forces that ruled the world. Although Einstein was shocked by this result, it was too good to be true. Over the years, problems were discovered that rendered Kaluza's idea useless. First, the theory was riddled with divergences and anomalies, which is typical of quantum gravity theories. Second, there was the much more disturbing physical question: why don't we see the fifth dimension? When we shoot arrows into the sky, we don't see them disappear into another dimension. Think of smoke, which slowly permeates every region of space. Since smoke is never observed to disappear into a higher dimension, physicists realized that higher dimensions, if they exist at all, must be smaller than an atom. For the past century, mystics and mathematicians have entertained the idea of higher dimensions, but physicists scoffed at the idea, since no one had ever seen objects enter a higher dimension. To salvage the theory, physicists had to propose that these higher dimensions were so small that they could not be observed in nature. Since our world is a four-dimensional world, it meant that the fifth dimension had to be rolled up into a tiny circle smaller than an atom, too small to be observed by experiment. String theory has to confront this same problem. We have to curl up these unwanted higher dimensions into a tiny ball, a process called compactification. According to string theory, the universe was originally 10-dimensional, with all the forces unified by the string. However, 10-dimensional hyperspace was unstable, and 6 of the 10 dimensions began to curl up into a tiny ball, leaving the other 4 dimensions to expand outward in a big bang. The reason we can't see these other dimensions is that they are much smaller than an atom, and hence nothing can get inside them. For example, a garden hose and a straw, from a distance, appear to be one-dimensional objects defined by their length. But if one examines them closely, one finds that they are actually two-dimensional surfaces or cylinders, but the second dimension has been curled up so that one does not see it. Why strings? Although previous attempts at a unified field theory have failed, string theory has survived all challenges. In fact, it has no rival. There are two reasons why string theory has succeeded where scores of other theories have failed. First, being a theory based on an extended object, the string, it avoids many of the divergences associated with point particles. As Newton observed, the gravitational force surrounding a point particle becomes infinite as we approach it. In Newton's famous inverse square law, the force of gravity grows as 1 over r squared, so that it soars to infinity as we approach the point particle. That is, as r goes to 0, the gravitational force grows as 1 over 0, which is infinite. Even in a quantum theory, the force remains infinite as we approach a quantum point particle. Over the decades, a series of arcane rules have been invented by Feynman and many others to brush these and many other types of divergences under the rug. But for a quantum theory of gravity, even the bag of tricks devised by Feynman is not sufficient to remove all the infinities in the theory. The problem is that point particles are infinitely small, meaning that their forces and energies are potentially infinite. But when we analyze string theory carefully, we find two mechanisms that can eliminate these divergences. The first mechanism is due to the topology of strings. The second, due to its symmetry, is called supersymmetry. The topology of string theory is entirely different from the topology of point particles, and hence the divergences are much different. Roughly speaking, because the string has a finite length, it means that the forces do not soar to infinity as we approach the string. Near the string, forces only grow as 1 over L squared, where L is the length of the string, which is on the order of the Planck length of 10 to the negative 33rd power centimeters. This length, L, acts to cut off the divergences. Because a string is not a point particle, but has a definite size, one can show that the divergences are smeared out along the string, and hence all physical quantities become finite. Although it seems intuitively obvious that the divergences of string theory are smeared out and hence finite, the precise mathematical expression of this fact is quite difficult and is given by the elliptic modular function, one of the strangest functions in mathematics, with a history so fascinating it played a key role in a Hollywood movie. Good Will Hunting is the story of a rough working-class kid from the back streets of Cambridge, played by Matt Damon, who exhibits astounding mathematical abilities. When he is not getting into fistfights with neighborhood toughs, he works as a janitor at MIT. The professors at MIT are shocked to find that this street tough is actually a mathematical genius who can simply write down the answers to seemingly intractable mathematical problems. Realizing that this street tough has learned advanced mathematics on his own, one of them blurts out that he is the next Ramanujan. In fact, Good Will Hunting is loosely based on the life of Srinivasa Ramanujan, the greatest mathematical genius of the 20th century, a man who grew up in poverty and isolation near Madras, India, at the turn of the last century. Living in isolation, he had to derive much of 19th-century European mathematics on his own. His career was like a supernova, briefly lighting up the heavens with his mathematical brilliance. Tragically, he died of tuberculosis in 1920 at the age of 37. Like Matt Damon in Good Will Hunting, he dreamed of mathematical equations, in this case the elliptic modular function, which possesses strange but beautiful mathematical properties, but only in 24 dimensions. Mathematicians are still trying to decipher the lost notebooks of Ramanujan found after his death. Looking back at Ramanujan's work, we see that it can be generalized to 8 dimensions, which is directly applicable to string theory. Physicists add 2 extra dimensions in order to construct a physical theory. For example, polarized sunglasses use the fact that light has 2 physical polarizations. It can vibrate left-right or up-down. But the mathematical formulation of light in Maxwell's equation is given with 4 components. 2 of these 4 vibrations are actually redundant. When we add 2 more dimensions to Ramanujan's functions, the magic numbers of mathematics become 10 and 26, precisely the magic numbers of string theory. So, in some sense, Ramanujan was doing string theory before World War I. The fabulous properties of these elliptic modular functions explain why the theory must exist in 10 dimensions. Only in that precise number of dimensions do most of the divergences that plague other theories disappear, as if by magic. But the topology of strings, by itself, is not powerful enough to eliminate all the divergences. The remaining divergences of the theory are removed by a second feature of string theory, its symmetry. Supersymmetry. The string possesses some of the largest symmetries known to science. In Chapter 4, in discussing inflation and the standard model, we see that symmetry gives us a beautiful way in which to arrange the subatomic particles into pleasing and elegant patterns. The 3 types of quarks can be arranged according to the symmetry SU3, which interchanges 3 quarks among themselves. It is believed that in gut theory, the 5 types of quarks and leptons might be arranged according to the symmetry SU5. In string theory, these symmetries cancel the remaining divergences and anomalies of the theory. Since symmetries are among the most beautiful and powerful tools at our disposal, one might expect that the theory of the universe must possess the most elegant and powerful symmetry known to science. The logical choice is a symmetry that interchanges not just the quarks, but all the particles found in nature. That is, the equations remain the same if we reshuffle all the subatomic particles among themselves. This precisely describes the symmetry of the superstring, called supersymmetry. It is the only symmetry that interchanges all the subatomic particles known to physics. This makes it the ideal candidate for the symmetry that arranges all the particles of the universe into a single, elegant, unified whole. If we look at the forces and particles of the universe, all of them fall into two categories, fermions and bosons, depending on their spin. They act like tiny spinning tops that can spin at various rates. For example, the photon, a particle of light that mediates the electromagnetic force, has spin 1. The weak and strong nuclear forces are mediated by W bosons and gluons, which also have spin 1. The graviton, a particle of gravity, has spin 2. All these with integral spin are called bosons. Similarly, the particles of matter are described by subatomic particles with half-integral spin, 1 over 2, 3 over 2, 5 over 2, and so on. Particles of half-integral spins are called fermions and include the electron, the neutrino, and the quarks. Thus, supersymmetry elegantly represents the duality between bosons and fermions, between forces and matter. In a supersymmetric theory, all the subatomic particles have a partner. Each fermion is paired with a boson. Although we have never seen these supersymmetric partners in nature, physicists have dubbed the partner of the electron the selectron, with spin 0. Physicists add an S to describe the superpartner of a particle. The weak interactions include particles called leptons. Their superpartners are called sleptons. Likewise, the quark may have a spin 0 partner called the squark. In general, the partners of the known particles, the quarks, leptons, gravitons, photons, and so on, are called sparticles, or superparticles. These sparticles have yet to be found in our atom smashers, probably because our machines are not powerful enough to create them. But since all subatomic particles are either fermions or bosons, a supersymmetric theory has the potential of unifying all known subatomic particles into one simple symmetry. We now have a symmetry large enough to include the entire universe. Think of a snowflake. Let each of the six prongs of the snowflake represent a subatomic particle, with every other prong being a boson and the one that follows being a fermion. The beauty of this super snowflake is that when we rotate it, it remains the same. In this way, the super snowflake unifies all the particles and their sparticles. So if we were to try to construct a hypothetical unified field theory with just six particles, a natural candidate would be the super snowflake. Supersymmetry helps to eliminate the remaining infinities that are fatal to other theories. We mentioned earlier that most divergences are eliminated because of the topology of the string. That is, because the string has a finite length, the forces do not soar to infinity as we approach it. When we examine the remaining divergences, we find that they are of two types, from the interactions of bosons and fermions. However, these two contributions always occur with the opposite signs. Hence, the boson contribution precisely cancels the fermion contribution. In other words, since fermionic and bosonic contributions always have opposite signs, the remaining infinities of the theory cancel against each other. So supersymmetry is more than window dressing. Not only is it an aesthetically pleasing symmetry because it unifies all the particles of nature, it is also essential in canceling the divergences of string theory. Recall the analogy of designing a sleek rocket, in which vibrations in the wings may eventually grow and tear the wings off. One solution is to exploit the power of symmetry, to redesign the wings so that vibrations in one wing cancel against vibrations in another. When one wing vibrates clockwise, the other wing vibrates counterclockwise, canceling the first vibration. Thus, the symmetry of the rocket, instead of being just an artificial, artistic device, is crucial to canceling and balancing the stresses on the wings. Similarly, supersymmetry cancels divergences by having the bosonic and fermionic parts cancel out against each other. Supersymmetry also solves a series of highly technical problems that are actually fatal to gut theory. Intricate mathematical inconsistencies in gut theory require supersymmetry to eliminate them. Although supersymmetry represents a powerful idea, at present there is absolutely no experimental evidence to support it. This may be because the superpartners of the familiar electrons and protons are simply too massive to be produced in today's particle accelerators. However, there is one tantalizing piece of evidence that points the way to supersymmetry. We know now that the strengths of the three quantum forces are quite different. In fact, at low energies, the strong force is 30 times stronger than the weak force and 100 times more powerful than the electromagnetic force. However, this was not always so. At the instant of the Big Bang, we suspect that all three forces were equal in strength. Working backward, physicists can calculate what the strengths of the three forces would have been at the beginning of time. By analyzing the Standard Model, physicists find that the three forces seem to converge in strength near the Big Bang, but they are not precisely equal. When one adds supersymmetry, however, all three forces fit perfectly and are of equal strength, precisely what a unified field theory would suggest. Although this is not direct proof of supersymmetry, it shows at least that supersymmetry is consistent with known physics. Deriving the Standard Model. Although superstrings have no adjustable parameters at all, string theory can offer solutions that are astonishingly close to the Standard Model, with its motley collections of bizarre subatomic particles and 19 free parameters, such as the masses of the particles and their coupling strengths. In addition, the Standard Model has three identical and redundant copies of all the quarks and leptons, which seems totally unnecessary. Fortunately, string theory can derive many of the qualitative features of the Standard Model effortlessly. It's almost like getting something for nothing. In 1984, Philip Candelas of the University of Texas, Gary Horowitz and Andrew Strominger of the University of California at Santa Barbara, and Edward Witten showed that if you wrapped up 6 of the 10 dimensions of string theory and still preserved supersymmetry in the remaining 4 dimensions, the tiny 6-dimensional world could be described by what mathematicians called a Calabi-Yau manifold. By making a few simple choices of the Calabi-Yau spaces, they showed that the symmetry of the string could be broken down to a theory remarkably close to the Standard Model. In this way, string theory gives us a simple answer as to why the Standard Model has 3 redundant generations. In string theory, the number of generations or redundancies in the quark model is related to the number of holes we have in the Calabi-Yau manifold. For example, a donut, an inner tube, and a coffee cup are all surfaces with one hole. Eyeglass frames have 2 holes. Calabi-Yau surfaces can have an arbitrary number of holes. Thus, by simply choosing the Calabi-Yau manifold that has a certain number of holes, we can construct a standard model with different generations of redundant quarks. Since we never see the Calabi-Yau space because it is so small, we also never see the fact that this space has donut holes in it. Over the years, teams of physicists have arduously tried to catalog all the possible Calabi-Yau spaces, realizing that the topology of this six-dimensional space determines the quarks and leptons of our four-dimensional universe. M-theory. The excitement surrounding string theory, unleashed back in 1984, could not last forever. By the mid-1990s, the superstring bandwagon was gradually losing steam among physicists. The easy problems the theory posed were picked off, leaving the hard ones behind. One such problem was that billions of solutions of the string equations were being discovered. By compactifying or curling up space-time in different ways, string solutions could be written down in any dimension, not just four. Each of the billions of string solutions corresponded to a mathematically self-consistent universe. Physicists were suddenly drowning in string solutions. Remarkably, many of them looked very similar to our universe. With a suitable choice of a Calabi-Yau space, it was relatively easy to reproduce many of the gross features of the standard model, with its strange collection of quarks and leptons, even with its curious set of redundant copies. However, it was exceedingly difficult, and remains a challenge even today, to find precisely the standard model, with the specific values of its 19 parameters and 3 redundant generations. The bewildering number of string solutions was actually welcomed by physicists who believe in the multiverse idea, since each solution represents a totally self-consistent parallel universe. But it was distressing that physicists had trouble finding precisely our own universe among this jungle of universes. One reason that this is so difficult is that one must eventually break supersymmetry, since we do not see supersymmetry in our low-energy world. In nature, for example, we do not see the selectron, the superpartner of the electron. If supersymmetry is unbroken, then the mass of each particle should equal the mass of its superparticle. Physicists believe that supersymmetry is broken, with the result that the masses of the superparticles are huge, beyond the range of current particle accelerators. But at present, no one has come up with a credible mechanism to break supersymmetry. David Gross of the Kavli Institute for Theoretical Physics in Santa Barbara has remarked that there are millions upon millions of solutions to string theory in three spatial dimensions, which is slightly embarrassing since there is no good way of choosing among them. There were other nagging questions. One of the most embarrassing was the fact that there were 5 self-consistent string theories. It was hard to imagine that the universe could tolerate 5 distinct unified field theories. Einstein believed that God had no choice in creating the universe, so why should God create 5 of them? The original theory, based on the Veneziano formula, describes what is called Type 1 superstring theory. Type 1 theory is based on both open strings, strings with 2 ends, as well as closed strings, circular strings. This is the theory that was most intensely studied in the early 1970s. Using string field theory, Kikawa and I were able to catalog the complete set of type 1 string interactions. We showed that type 1 strings require 5 interactions. For closed strings, we showed that only 1 interaction term is necessary. Kikawa and I also showed that it is possible to construct fully self-consistent theories with only closed strings, those resembling a loop. Today, these are called type 2 string theories, where strings interact via pinching a circular string into 2 smaller strings, resembling the mitosis of a cell. The most realistic string theory is called the heterotic string, formulated by the Princeton group, including David Gross, Emil Martinek, Ryan Rome, and Jeffrey Harvey. Heterotic strings can accommodate symmetry groups called E8 times E8 or O32, which are large enough to swallow up gut theories. the heterotic string is based entirely on closed strings. In the 1980s and 1990s, when scientists referred to the superstring, they tacitly were referring to the heterotic string, because it was rich enough to allow one to analyze the standard model and gut theories. The symmetry group E8 times E8, for example, can be broken down to E8, then E6, which in turn is large enough to include the SU3 times SU2 times U1 symmetry of the standard model. Mystery of supergravity. In addition to the five superstring theories, there was another nagging question that had been forgotten in the rush to solve string theory. Back in 1976, three physicists, Peter van Nieuwenhuizen, Sergio Ferrara, and Daniel Friedman, then working at the State University of New York at Stony Brook, discovered that Einstein's original theory of gravity could become supersymmetric if one introduced just one new field, a superpartner to the original gravity field, called the gravitino, meaning little graviton, with spin 3 over 2. This new theory was called supergravity, and it was based on point particles, not strings. Unlike the superstring, with its infinite sequence of notes and resonances, supergravity had just two particles. In 1978, it was shown by Eugene Kremer, Joel Schurk, and Bernard Julia of the École Normale Supérieure that the most general supergravity could be written down in 11 dimensions. If we tried to write down supergravity theory in 12 or 13 dimensions, mathematical inconsistencies would arise. In the late 1970s and early 1980s, it was thought that supergravity might be the fabled unified field theory. The theory even inspired Stephen Hawking to speak of the end of theoretical physics being in sight when he gave his inaugural lecture upon taking the Lucasian Chair of Mathematics at Cambridge University, the same chair once held by Isaac Newton. But supergravity soon ran into the same difficult problems that had killed previous theories. Although it had fewer infinities than ordinary field theory, in the final analysis, supergravity was not finite and was potentially riddled with anomalies. Like all other field theories, except for string theory, it blew up in scientists' faces. Another supersymmetric theory that can exist in 11 dimensions is supermembrane theory. Although the string has just one dimension that defines its length, the supermembrane can have two or more dimensions because it represents a surface. Remarkably, it was shown that two types of membranes, a two-brane and five-brane, are self-consistent in 11 dimensions as well. However, supermembranes also had problems. They are notoriously difficult to work with, and their quantum theories actually diverge. While violin strings are so simple that the Greek Pythagoreans worked out their laws of harmony 2,000 years ago, membranes are so difficult that even today no one has a satisfactory theory of the music based on them. Plus, it was shown that these membranes are unstable and eventually decay into point particles. So, by the mid-1990s, physicists had several mysteries. Why were there five string theories in 10 dimensions? And why were there two theories in 11 dimensions, supergravity and supermembranes? Moreover, all of them possessed supersymmetry. 11th dimension. In 1994, a bombshell was dropped. Another breakthrough took place that once again changed the entire landscape. Edward Witten and Paul Townsend of Cambridge University mathematically found that 10-dimensional string theory was actually an approximation to a higher, mysterious 11-dimensional theory of unknown origin. Witten, for example, showed that if we take a membrane-like theory in 11 dimensions and curl up one dimension, then it becomes 10-dimensional type 2A string theory. Soon afterward, it was found that all 5 string theories could be shown to be the same, just different approximations of the same mysterious 11-dimensional theory. Since membranes of different sorts can exist in 11 dimensions, Witten called this new theory M theory. But not only did it unify the 5 different string theories, as a bonus, it also explained the mystery of supergravity. Supergravity, if you'll recall, was an 11-dimensional theory that contained just 2 particles with 0 mass, the original Einstein graviton plus its supersymmetric partner, called the gravitino. M theory, however, has an infinite number of particles with different masses, corresponding to the infinite vibrations that can ripple on some sort of 11-dimensional membrane. But M theory can explain the existence of supergravity if we assume that a tiny portion of M theory, just the massless particles, is the old supergravity theory. In other words, supergravity theory is a tiny subset of M theory. Similarly, if we take this mysterious 11-dimensional membrane-like theory and curl up 1 dimension, the membrane turns into a string. In fact, it turns into precisely type 2 string theory. For example, if we look at a sphere in 11 dimensions and then curl up 1 dimension, the sphere collapses and its equator becomes a closed string. We see that string theory can be viewed as a slice of a membrane in 11 dimensions if we curl up the 11th dimension into a small circle. Thus, we find a beautiful and simple way of unifying all 10-dimensional and 11-dimensional physics into a single theory. It was a conceptual tour de force. I still remember the shock generated by this explosive discovery. I was giving a talk at Cambridge University at that time. Paul Townsend was gracious enough to introduce me to the audience, but before my talk, he explained with great excitement this new result, that in the 11th dimension, the various string theories can be unified into a single theory. The title of my talk mentioned the 10th dimension. He told me before I spoke that if this proved to be successful, then the title of my talk would be obsolete. I thought silently to myself, uh-oh, either he was raving mad, or the physics community was going to be turned completely upside down. I could not believe what I was hearing, so I fired a barrage of questions at him. I pointed out that 11-dimensional supermembranes, a theory he helped to formulate, were useless because they were mathematically intractable, and worse, they were unstable. He admitted this was a problem, but he was confident that these questions would be solved in the future. I also said that 11-dimensional supergravity was not finite. It blew up, like all the other theories except string theory. That was no longer a problem, he replied calmly, because supergravity was nothing but an approximation of a larger, still mysterious theory, M theory, which was finite. It was actually string theory reformulated in the 11th dimension in terms of membranes. Then I said that supermembranes were unacceptable because no one had ever been able to explain how membranes interact as they collide and reform, as I had done in my own PhD thesis years ago for string theory. He admitted that was a problem, but he was confident it too could be solved. Last, I said that M theory was not really a theory at all, since its basic equations were not known. Unlike string theory, which could be expressed in terms of the simple string field equations I wrote down years ago that encapsulated the entire theory, membranes had no field theory at all. He conceded this point as well, but he remained confident that the equations for M theory would eventually be found. My mind was sent swimming. If he was right, string theory was once again about to undergo a radical transformation. Membranes, which were once relegated to the dustbin of physics history, suddenly were being resurrected. The origin of this revolution is that string theory is still evolving backward. Even today, no one knows the simple physical principles that underlie the entire theory. I like to visualize this as walking in the desert and accidentally stumbling upon a small, beautiful pebble. When we brush away the sand, we find that the pebble is actually the top of a gigantic pyramid buried under tons of sand. After decades of painfully excavating the sand, we find mysterious hieroglyphics, hidden chambers, and tunnels. One day, we will find the ground floor and finally open up the doorway. Brain world, as in membranes. One of the novel features of M-theory is that it introduces not only strings, but a whole menagerie of membranes of different dimensions. In this picture, point particles are called zero brains because they are infinitely small and have no dimension. A string is then a one brain because it is a one-dimensional object defined by its length. A membrane is a two brain, like the surface of a basketball, defined by length and width. A basketball can float in three dimensions, but its surface is only two-dimensional. Our universe might be some kind of three-brain, a three-dimensional object that has length, width, and breadth. As one wit noted, if space has p dimensions, p being an integer, then our universe is a p-brain. A chart showing all these p-brains is called a brain scan. There are several ways in which we can take a membrane and collapse it down to a string. Instead of wrapping up the 11th dimension, we can also slice off the equator of an 11-dimensional membrane, creating a circular ribbon. If we let the thickness of the ribbon shrink, then the ribbon becomes a 10-dimensional string. Peter Horava and Edward Witten showed that we derive the heterotic string in this fashion. In fact, it can be shown that there are five ways in which to reduce 11-dimensional M-theory down to 10 dimensions, thereby yielding the five superstring theories. M-theory gives us a quick, intuitive answer to the mystery of why there are five different string theories. Imagine standing on a large hilltop and looking down on the plains. From the vantage point of the third dimension, we can see the different parts of the plain unified into a single coherent picture. Likewise, from the vantage point of the 11th dimension, looking down on the 10th dimension, we see the crazy quilt of five superstring theories as nothing more than different patches of the 11th dimension. Duality. Although Paul Townsend could not answer most of the questions I asked him at that time, what ultimately convinced me of the correctness of this idea was the power of yet another symmetry. Not only does M-theory have the largest set of symmetries known to physics, it has yet another trick up its sleeve, duality, which gives M-theory the uncanny ability to absorb all five superstring theories into one theory. Consider electricity and magnetism, which are governed by Maxwell's equations. It was noticed long ago that if you simply interchange the electric field with the magnetic field, the equations look almost the same. This symmetry can be made exact if you can add monopoles, single poles of magnetism, into Maxwell's equations. The revised Maxwell's equations remain precisely the same if we exchange the electric field with the magnetic field and interchange the electric charge E with the inverse of the magnetic charge G. This means that electricity, if the electric charge is low, is precisely equivalent to magnetism, if the magnetic charge is high. This equivalence is called duality. In the past, this duality was considered nothing more than a scientific curiosity, a parlor trick, since no one has ever seen a monopole, even today. However, physicists found it remarkable that Maxwell's equations had a hidden symmetry that nature apparently does not use, at least in our sector of the universe. Similarly, the five string theories are all dual to each other. Consider type 1 and the heterotic